I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 242nd installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new, and tonight we are talking about Star Trek Resurgence.
This is kind of a cool rarity. There's not a ton of Star Trek games. They don't put them out like they do Star Wars games.
Yeah. So this is a rare opportunity for us to talk about a Star Trek video game. Although we have been getting some in recent years. You know, the Star Trek Online has been going strong for over a decade. Mm-hmm. We got the Bridge Crew VR game recently. That was a lot of fun. And I actually did a YouTube video review. I don't think we did a podcast episode on that, but there is a review on YouTube. They also had that Prodigy game back in, I think it came out.
All right.
Last year, but I don't remember exactly when.
Yeah, kind of slightly aimed at
October-ish, maybe
younger players. But yeah, you got to play as Dal and Gwyn. Yeah,
yeah. And Dave, I actually did something that is odd for me, but I streamed my gameplay of Resurgence, and
whole thing.
Yeah, well, yeah, all 12 hours. This is a short game.
I mean, yeah, that's like, short, but that's a long stream.
Not all at once. It was I played the game across three different 4-hour sessions. But
okay.
People tuned in and watched that. So I don't know if that's a thing that people. I know it's like trendy these days. Like
It's out of my wheelhouse. But I do know it's a thing that people definitely do.
Yeah. But I don't watch content like that, but it's not hard to make. I mean, like, you know, it'd be easy. I don't know, Dave, we've talked about like doing it like a co-op play of the Prodigy game. I don't know if there would be interest in if anyone wanted to watch us play that. But if anyone does want to see it, let us know, because that would be something that we could do.
So Joanne was asking in the audience if I played the game too. And the answer is no, I have not played it yet. So I think the format we're going to do here, Fathery, is I'm going to kind of interrogate you about it.
Yeah, we're going to do a debrief.
I'm going to drop a SETI eel in your ear, and then you will tell me whatever you know about the game and where I can find Admiral James T. Kirk.
All right, I'll see what I can do.
But we're going to kind of keep it spoiler light, I think.
I think the best thing to do, Dave, would be like if you know, for like the first half or so of our conversation, we try to keep it as spoiler free as possible. And then maybe like some light spoilers towards the end. But I don't want to give too much away, because I know you yourself have not played this game, but
I think you to play this one.
Yeah, I think you're probably likely to at least attempt it at some point in the near future. Yeah, I think that'll be the approach. We'll keep it mostly spoiler free, definitely for like the first half of the conversation, and then maybe some light spoilers towards the end. But none of the big reveals, nothing like that. Just, you know, some people like to go in totally blind, like they don't want to know like any of, are there any cameos or anything like that. So I won't reveal too much of that until later. But if people do want to know all the secrets, you can always go watch the stream videos. It's multiple videos, but there's a YouTube playlist on the Text Trek YouTube channel. So if you want to watch the entire 12-hour game like that, you can do it. And you get to have like fathery commentary, because I'm talking about the game as I'm playing it. So that's there. That's
fathery. I'm gonna just cheat, ask a question. Did you like it?
Dave, I'm glad you asked. I will answer that question in just one moment, because we do have like a little bit of housekeeping and news to cover. Before we talk about Resurgence, I have to give a huge thank you and shout out to all of our lovely Patreon supporters. It means so much to us that people are willing to chip in and cover the expenses to keep the show running. That's not just this new hardware I've been talking about, but also the subscription expenses to StreamYard, which normally runs a little better than it was earlier today, but the website hosting, stuff like that. So, you know, it's really cool that I can ask people to help out with that stuff, and people answer the call. So a huge thank you. It means so much to us. to Starfleet, Sohel, Cake is Eternal, Crazy Duchy, Joanne Robertson, John Dogg, Geek Filter, Earl Grey Trekkie, Quarks Barb, Ingenium, Stephanie Durantes, Matthew Everett, and our anonymous supporters. We love hanging out with y'all every month to celebrate your support in the monthly Patreon watch party. We will be doing our next watch party in June, and that's going to be another birthday celebration. It's going to be June 17th. We're going to be celebrating Benjinium's birthday. If you come into the Patreon at the $6 a month level, at the Bridge Crew level, you get to pick any movie or two-parter, or you, I guess you could just do, you know, two episodes you really like. Any movie or two-parter or two episodes, and we'll watch that for the watch party in your birthday month. We had two Julys, so Benjinium volunteered to move his watch party up a month to June. But yeah, we're going to do the DS9 Season 3 two-parter, Improbable Cause, and The Die is Cast. Those are the episodes. It starts off as like a murder investigation. You know, someone tries to blow up Garrick, and then it ends with this huge, massive, giant-scale galacto-political conflict that involves the Tal Shiar, the Obsidian Order, and the Dominion, and peeks into both the backstory of Garrick, but also Odo getting to explore his connection to the Dominion early on, and that realization that his people are the founders. And so that's a really, really fun two-part episode to enjoy. It's going to be a blast watching that with y'all in June. In the Patreon watch party, anyone can come into that. If you're a member, you can come in as little as $2 a month. Any tier in the Patreon that will get you into the watch parties. And if you want to be more generous than $2 a month, there's additional perks as well. But thank you everyone who does that. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun, you know, watching Star Trek with y'all every month. So
we had a blast watching Voyager's two-part time travel episode.
Yes, for Aaron's birthday. Just last week. So. Yeah, so and then we're going to have another two-part adventure in July because we have another patron's birthday. So we have some really cool stuff. Yeah, so $6 a month you can pick what we'll watch when it's your birthday, and $2 a month will get you into the if there's someone's birthday, you know, we'll still do some watch party. It's there's a system to how those are selected too. But you come in as like the $14 a month level, and then you get to pick much more often, so you get into the regular rotation for when it's non-birthday selection. So right now we have Earl Grey Trekkie in there. He's probably gonna get to pick for August, but I don't know. So, but thank you everyone helping out there in the Patreon. Little bit of news to discuss. In addition to getting this game this week, there is also a trailer for Strange New Worlds Season 2. So
right,
folks can go not only watch the gameplay of Star Trek Resurgence, but you can go watch the hour-long breakdown and analysis and reaction video that I did with Aaron and Rachel a couple days ago, and that's on YouTube. But yeah, we go over that Season 2 trailer. We talk about what we're looking forward to in Season 2, some concerns that we have, but overall, you know, very, very positive and very excited.
And I mean, the big thing is the, what do you call it? It's the Lower Decks crossover was finally glimpsed in that trailer.
Yes.
That's huge.
I don't know when that'll happen. I think that's probably going to be towards the end of the season. But yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of cool stuff. We have, you know, Klingons that look what I would call like correct. I mean, you could also make the argument that it's incorrect because maybe they should be TOS era flathead Klingons. But they look
the longest running for sure.
Yeah, they're gorgeous bastards. I just love, you know, freeze framing the trailers on the Klingons and staring at them.
Smacking Spock on the back.
then there's you know, more stuff with the Gorn, which I'm kind of concerned about. There's stuff with this Paul Wesley version of Kirk. We know we're gonna have Una's trial, so there's gonna be probably 10 very different, you know, stories. That was the beauty of Season 1. And you know, even though there are some things in Season 1 I didn't like, the Gorn and Kirk, I know both those things are back in Season 2, but you know what? I know there's going to be plenty of episodes that don't involve Kirk or don't involve Gorn, and
y'all got to let up off of Kirk. That guy's doing a good job, and I like him, and you're wrong.
Well, I disagree, but I'm going into Season 2, you know, wanting to like him. I'm rooting for him. And they've said that
I believe it.
They've said that he plays Kirk extremely different in Season 2, that what he was doing in Season 1 that's not supposed to be his main performance. That was supposed to be like an alternate timeline version. I don't know if I believe that, but I hope that that's true.
I was not to revisit that for length, but
yeah, you liked him.
Right. I felt like he came across as the Kirk who in the like in a somewhat more serious episode who you'd see strategizing with McCoy and Spock and stuff.
That's fine to like them. So, I'm glad you liked them.
I want that voice out there. Tech Trek doesn't hate Kirk.
No, I don't hate. I think Kirk is a great character.
I know. I'm trying to put words in your mouth.
I just like Paul Wesley's performance as Kirk in what in the one episode I've seen.
We'll cross our fingers and we'll continue the discussion when he shows up.
I've heard other people say that they liked him.
I've heard other people say they didn't. So we're at a detente for now.
That's the more common opinion. Yeah. But he's gonna hopefully win us over in season two. At least that's my hope. But if he does or doesn't, I'll let y'all know when we get there. What else was there? Is there any other news this week? Game streams, trailer reaction.
No movement on Section 31. There's a WGA strike going on.
Yeah, well, there might be another strike too. I think the Screen Actors have voted to strike and the Directors Guild. I don't. Both of their contracts come up on June 30th. So if we have either of those unions go on strike while the writers are striking, that is a absolute total shutdown of the entire Hollywood system. Nothing will be in development. And nothing will be in production. So I don't know. We shouldn't spend too much time on this, but part of me kind of wants that to happen because a big thing that's going on now in the Hollywood system is you've had these tech bro Silicon Valley industries come in, which are incredibly anti-labor in many of their practices. But, you know, companies like Apple, Netflix, Amazon are getting involved in the television world through their streaming platforms. And I guess, you know, they're bringing in a lot of the investor types from Wall Street. The old rulers of Hollywood were bastards too, but at least like they were like passionate about, you know, making movies and not just, you know, getting like quarterly bonuses.
These guys would turn it all over to AI tomorrow if they could and still make as much or more money.
Yes, if it just made like one penny more, they
absolutely
would do it.
Everybody's out on the streets.
they're legally obligated to, because if you have the opportunity to increase your profits and you don't do it, then you can be sued by your stockholders. So
what an interesting system.
Yeah, it's almost like it's terrible and is literally going to destroy the world. But yeah, so that's going on. I don't know. That's going to be interesting. We're still going to get Discovery next year. We're still going to get a season of Lower Decks and probably another 10. Prodigies next year. So I think we're still gonna have like at least 30 episodes of Star Trek. That'll be the worst case scenario, is that Strange New Worlds doesn't start production until much later in the year, and we don't actually see season 3 until 2025. But that's worst case scenario. That's not too bad. We'll still get 30 episodes next year, so
just a question of how long until the studios do the right thing.
I'll be curious to see what happens in the next 2 or 3 weeks as we approach the Screen Actors Guild contract, and then also the directors, the DGA, right? With all the news out of the way, we can talk about Resurgence. So the game came out Tuesday. I played 4 hours Tuesday night, about 4 hours Wednesday night, about 4 hours Thursday night. Now it's Friday and we're talking about it.
I like a good brisk game. I'm just gonna say that up front. I am a gamer. I'm very often, you know, I'm probably playing a game every week or two. Or
yeah, you play much more than I do.
But I also, I don't like, you know, some, even a 40 hour game, let alone 60, 80, 100 hour plus games. If people play a ton of games, they love that. They want to sink their teeth into an RPG or a really deep, you know, exploration game and play all that and replay it. And you know, I'm like, man, if I could be done in 8 to 12 hours, which is one of the reasons I like indie games and stuff sometimes, I'm all about it. I like to get in and get out. So
yeah. Yeah, I'm the same way. I occasionally do love those massive, huge open world games. They're extremely rare. And most of the ones that I like now, it's because like, oh, it's part of an intellectual property I fell in love with decades ago. I don't have time. I don't have time to like, I already like enough things. I don't need like new things to like. So,
Whereas I am like, I will jump at anything new and shiny about every week or two. And so, and I'm actually a kind of a hypocrite on this because I will play those longer games sometimes. A game that say runs, I don't know, 40 hours if you're not trying to get all the achievements. I will play those and I enjoy them. But I get like there's a special kind of enjoyment out of something that's brisk. There's not as many really notable games for me that do that though. So, but let's talk about this one. I think before we get into it, there's been lots of Star Trek games over the years though, and this one has a kind of unusual format that my understanding is that it's very much in the style of Telltale Games, a studio that produced kind of talky action adventures, almost like sophisticated choose your own adventure type games with lots of dialogue trees, a little like Mass Effect. Fathery, is that accurate? Is that what the game is like?
Yeah, it's a single player narrative adventure is what you call that genre.
Right on. Single player narrative. Okay, I should get used to saying that.
But yeah, it's developed by Dramatic Lab. So if people have heard of Telltale, that was the studio that really like pioneered like this version of games where, yeah, so much of it is just you choose the responses. It's kind of like a choose your own adventure book, if anyone's familiar with that, but like as a game. That for a certain, I guess, generation, that'll be like the easiest way to explain it. Another
Yeah.
generation will be like, what the hell is a choose your own adventure
I
book?
think
But
for the newer generation, with when you've got a game as popular as Mass Effect with really good dialogue trees in it, I think that will be the touchstone for them.
Sure.
And I really love Mass Effect. It had some of the best voice acting and choices I've seen, and I was hoping this game would be a little bit like that, kind of in a Star Trek setting.
Yeah, I mean, if you want like Mass Effect as Star Trek, I think Star Trek Online is probably closer to
Sure, I
that.
guess I should mean just the Mass Effect dialogue parts and not all the pew pew parts.
I mean, this would be this has if you want the dialogue side of that, then this leans. I know Star Trek Online does that too. This leans much more into it.
Right.
The people from Telltale, I think I mentioned, like they're Dramatic Labs now. They're former Telltale people. Like
Right. It's
they left.
literally some of the
It's the
guys who pioneered that.
same people, just like a different company. But yeah, they left the original Telltale people left and started their own company, I guess, Dramatic Labs. And Star Trek does seem like the perfect franchise to have these types of games because so much of Star Trek is about, it's talky. It's very dialogue heavy.
Right. When people sometimes make fun of Star Trek, usually because they're more the action-friendly Star Wars nerds, it's because it's talky.
It also grapples with a lot of, big decisions and characters having to struggle with moral dilemmas and these moral quandaries that we talk so much about when we're talking about Star Trek. So that's basically the game. This is like, hey, do you like Star Trek moral quandaries? Then this is the Star Trek moral quandary simulator.
But you're still walking around in like a pretty nicely realized 3D environment, right? Like we're in and around ship decks and hallways and stuff like that.
Yeah, so the game is largely set on the USS Resolute, and they do some really great uses of the Star Trek universe. The Resolute's the Centaur class. That's that really weird kitbash ship that we first saw in DS9 when Charlie Reynolds was chasing Sisko, when Sisko was in the Jem'Hadar ship, and undercover basically is like a Jem'Hadar ship. They didn't
Right.
they couldn't tell them like, oh, we're actually Starfleet. We're using this on a secret mission. But that Centaur class is it's a kitbash between the Miranda class and the Excelsior class. It's basically like the Excelsior saucer and then like the roll bar on the top of the Miranda and then like two Excelsior nacelles attached to it. But it's a design I've always liked. We also saw it in Prodigy recently. It was in that big battle in the Prodigy season one finale. The Centaur class was there. But the interior of the ship, it's so beautiful. It's so perfect. It really feels like you're in a Berman era Starfleet ship, and there's an insane attention to detail because they know like the Star Trek fans are the ones who are going to pay attention. Like, oh, is this actually what a tricorder looks like? Oh, is this actually what a sick bay in 2380 would look like? It's very similar to Voyager, the Enterprise E, and
2380, like where does that land in Star
it's
Trek terms? Like from first, go ahead.
it's the year after Nemesis. It's season one of Lower Decks also.
Okay, that's a pretty good explanation there. I like that.
Yeah, and again, we'll keep things pretty spoiler free for the next several minutes. Then we might get into like some light spoilers at the end. But just like yeah, the basic premise of the game is that you have two playable characters you play as. One is the new first officer on the Resolute, Jara Riddick, and the other playable character is he's a speaking of Lower Decks, he's a lower decker. He's petty officer. He's not even enlisted. Not even an ensign. He's a petty officer. Carter Diaz. And so half the game you're this lower decks guy who's getting bossed around by the chief engineer and stuff, and then half the game you are the first officer making like the big decisions on the bridge.
Oh, so the game will just bounce between those two. Like, do you have a do you get to choose when you go, or does the game like end of scene time?
Yeah, it's very like guardraily. It's very like you're you know on like a linear track, and yeah, the story is focusing on Riddick, you're Riddick. When the story is focusing on Diaz, you're Diaz. And sometimes it goes back and forth pretty quick. Sometimes you'll spend 20 minutes as one, then 20 minutes as the other. It feels pretty organic the way it cuts back and forth. It feels like you're watching a Star Trek episode that has an A story and a B story, and at points they interconnect. Oh, yeah.
And I think I heard that there's, like, what you do in one story might affect how things happen. Obviously, what the engineer does might affect how things are going on the bridge and vice versa.
Yeah, there's consequence. Yeah, sometimes it is kind of like you're giving yourself orders, because, like, you're as the first officer, you might decide, you know, something to do on a mission. And then as Carter Diaz, you actually have to go and do that.
So Diaz and Riddick. Those are the names.
Yes. Yeah. And Riddick is a woman. She's actually an alien. She's a new species, but they've also were oppressed by the Cardassians. And they don't really go too much into like her backstory or her people, but they do talk about them a lot as like they're like they basically got wiped out. They're considered a dying race. And she has an interesting aspect to her. She's pretty much completely human with a weird prosthetic added to her forehead. Even I know there's no prosthetic. She's a CGI person, but
that's the visual the visual vocabulary of Star Trek very often.
But the other unique thing about her is that she needs this, I think it was deuterium. Needs the substance deuterium from time to time. If she doesn't get injections, she'll die if she gets like too low on it. That's an element in there. I mean, you know, when that was introduced early in the game, I was like, oh, that's gonna come into play later. There's some reason they added that. That was cool. Diaz, he's just a normal human dude, but he's very kind of blue collar working class, and similar to O'Brien, but also a bit unique. He feels like he's his own guy. He's not just like they didn't just do like young Latino O'Brien. They changed him up enough where he does feel like a fully realized individual.
You know, Father, what you were saying about Riddick taking that the meds. You know, I'm sure that, you know, it has a plot point and stuff like that, but that's interesting too, because it might be reflective of someone now who's taking really any medication, you know, like for diabetes or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Well, she has a disability. It's like they kind of made her like the equivalent of, yeah, like someone with a disability.
Right. But, you know, clearly, not, something that's holding her back if she's first officer.
Yeah, and she is like kind of the new kid on the block. She's the new kid at school, you know, coming onto the game. Actually opens with her like on the shuttle on her way to the Resolute, and you know, you meet the first Resolute crew members. You kind of meet them from her perspective, and you see her introductions to the captain, to some of the other senior officers.
How does that go?
I mean, a lot of it just depends on your choices. So I do feel like the broad strokes of the story are a bit limited, but the character dynamics and like the specific relationships with individual characters, I think that's where your decisions have the most consequence in this game. And after conversations, you'll get like an icon of the character you're talking to, and it's either green, gray, or red, indicating if you know they really liked how you responded to them, they didn't have an opinion either way, or they really disliked how you responded to them. And so you can kind of build up favor with some of these people.
That's interesting. So like Spock, and if he and McCoy argued, like, and you were playing Spock, it might go to like red for McCoy because he's pissed at him.
Yes, or you could, you know, choose like another option, and you could, you know, maybe make it go green, and then, you know, later, depending on how people feel about you, they might be, you know, more helpful. They might be untrustworthy towards you. You know, it all depends. Mm-hmm. So you do feel the weight of your consequences. I know that there's other games that use this format that I think probably have much more varied consequences in the grand scheme of the overall larger story. I think here, you know, I'm pretty sure, like, you know, however you play this, like the good guys are going to win, you know, like we'll talk a little bit more about the story in a moment, but like, you know, like I don't think there's like, you know, like, I don't think you could like get like the whole ship blown up or get like the Federation destroyed or anything like that.
Sure.
So it's not going to be like,
they can only program so many and write so many voice interactions guessing what you're going to do.
Yeah, but the little things I think can be very different. And that gives a degree of replayability to this game.
Right. You can try out some other stuff or buddy up with someone else.
I'm going to play it again because it is only 12 hours. I think maybe I should wait a while, but I always talk about like things I'm going to do on like this day where I have nothing to do. Like that's ever going to happen. But I would like to like sit down and replay the whole thing in like 12 hours on a Saturday or something and just see like how different I can make it. At the same time, I say that, but I also know that I, will want to make a lot of the same choices, because I sometimes I take stuff like this a little too seriously, and I really try to think like, no, what would this character say? I'm trying to like play as this character,
right?
Or, you know, what would a Starfleet officer do? But because so much of Star Trek is about doing the right thing and figuring out the right thing and always doing what's compassionate is going to appeal to the greater good, the goods of the many, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. It really is the perfect sandbox for these types of stories. Cause it's really, you know, this game, as much as it is like, you know, a gameplay, it's to me, for what I get the most enjoyment out of it is just kind of it's a story delivery system. A little mm-hmm. different from reading a book or watching a movie or something. But I mean, that's what I got out of it the most was the story.
Right. I suppose in a way it's like you're reading a Star Trek novel with interactive elements. Not so interactive that you can change the whole book around, but interactive enough that you can make some fairly notable decisions and feel like you are walking through that novel and kind of participating.
Yeah, and so, you know, if any of that sounds interesting to people and y'all, you know, play games, I recommend, you know, checking it out. We might get like a little slight light spoilers, like things that are like in like, you know, like the trailers for the game and stuff. So if you don't want to know anything else, then, you know, you probably just come back and listen to the rest of this later. But, you know, if you're still here, I think we can like get into like the story of the game.
Sure. I've heard it's got a solidly deep story.
Yeah. I mean, so they bring in a couple of huge cameos, really big characters, but, you know, Spock is a ambassador. He's a diplomat in this time. Mm-hmm. I think he probably should have been, you know, busy on Romulus, but they really wanted him in the game. So it's okay. I guess he was like leaving Romulus for like the occasional diplomatic crisis. But yeah, Spock is in this game, and you're dealing with, you kind of have like two problems dropped in your lap right at the beginning. The first problem is the ship has just been refitted and is leaving a station to go on a diplomatic mission. There are these two alien races. They're also both new creations. They're new things that this game is trying to introduce to the Star Trek universe. But they're on the brink of war. One species was more advanced than the other species, and they set up shop on one of their moons where there is like a heavy dilithium deposit. And they're basically using those people's moon to mine dilithium. And they're using them as a labor source. They're not like enslaving them. Like, you know, like they pay them, they're sharing resources with them, but there's definitely like a degree of exploitation. And at one point the workers in the mines have rebelled and they've captured the mines. And so these other guys are like, you got to give us our mine back or we're going to go to war with you. And they're like, no, we're not giving it back. It's our moon. We should have control of the mines. And so Starfleet is coming with Spock to help settle the conflict that's going on. Also, for whatever reason, the like largest ion storm anyone has ever seen has also like just appeared in the system. So what's going on with that? And are these two things connected? And that's basically the premise.
Okay, that sounds pretty solid. It's interesting to me that the game, despite having Spock in it, it doesn't sound like it's like exactly a nostalgia fest. It sounds like they wanted to create some new lore.
No, it's definitely a new experience. And that was, I guess, like a little bit of something I wasn't quite expecting playing the game. And also, we'll talk about this later, but there is a prequel comic. I don't know if it's technically a prequel, because the comic did release first. All five issues of the comic came out first. So technically, it's not a prequel, but there's a tie-in comic set before this.
Okay.
And one of the things in there is like, man, like these characters, like, why don't I don't know them? It's like I kind of wanted there to be like, you know, can we just have like Data, like, you know, show up or just something to kind of get me, you know.
It's a little hard to just walk in on a completely new crew sometimes.
Yeah, and they weren't exactly like super colorful. They didn't just kind of pop immediately. And I was like, am I going to like any of these people? But no, what it is they're very subdued and nuanced. But one of the things that they do really well in the game on a technological level is the graphics are good. They're decent. They're, you know, it doesn't look like a new AAA title or anything, but it's good graphics. And the character moment, like the character acting, like the facial expressions and things like that, are spot on. Every now and then there'd be like, I think, oh, that's a little funky, that animation, you know, the way that that character is running down that corridor, or like, did his hand just pass through the table? What's going on? But, you know, for the most part, aside like those, you know, occasional anomalies like that, the animation I think was very, very on point, because the important stuff to me, I think the most important thing was the expressions, what would be acting if they were, you know, physical actors. But, you know, animators have to understand all those acting things too, like, you know, when to have like a long pause before a line of dialogue, or when should someone, you know, break eye contact, when should they have like an intense stare without blinking, like that type of stuff was very, very, very good.
I believe all of the notable Telltale games that I heard about, one they did based on the comic Fables, a Batman one, Walking Dead, those kind of things, none of them were exactly known as graphic powerhouses. People usually liked the graphics, but they were there to facilitate the story and not to have, big, super flashy sequences. Although, I don't know, Father, is there, this are one, there action?
Yeah, and this one moments? Is definitely like, this is better graphics than those games. Like, I think it looks, it doesn't look like a brand new PS5 game, but it looks like a solid PS4 game.
Okay. I know I always get a kick, honestly, out of just seeing 3D, good 3D renderings of Trek ships and stuff like that, especially being able to walk around bridges.
There's really cool ship porn, both inside and outside. There's some phenomenal ship action that's well realized. There's also a lot of cool Starfleet stuff. They have the first contact environmental suits, and it looks just perfectly screen accurate to how they looked in that movie. And that was nice. That was awesome to see. They like anything that like already existed in the Star Trek universe, they just copied and pasted that. The only things they created was when it had to be something new. Mm-hmm. But it does add new stuff. We get these new aliens and stuff.
Well, I suppose even the copying and pasting, not to underwrite their skills, it's like they had to, render those things. They didn't all have them as digital assets ready to go for this particular style of the game.
The other Star franchise is very privileged. They have, the huge Lucasfilm empire. It's basically a giant mm-hmm. Death Star. They have, every CGI rendering of a TIE fighter or X-Wing on file for anyone. They share those assets with anytime anyone's doing a game or a cartoon or anything, like Lucasfilm has all of that.
That's wild.
We don't have that. So, we're getting a license for a video game, at Dramatic Labs. Okay. We're going to have to build all this from scratch, basically. I know sometimes they'll share conceptual stuff, with some of the Star Trek comics, they'll tell them, hey, this is what's going on in our shows, this year, for your mm-hmm. comics and stuff like that. Or, they'll be like, oh, look at this. Here's some character designs and stuff. Right. When we talked to a J.K. Woodward, the comic book artist, he was saying oh, yeah, they showed him stuff the Discovery Klingons and stuff. He got early glimpses at all that because he had to draw it. But beyond that, when people are working with Star Trek, they have to do it themselves. So they did a really great job here. And it'd be cool if we did have, if there is a way for something else, if they create something on Prodigy, it'd be cool if these people doing a game, they can use that. They have access to those files. We got a little bit of that lately with Picard, with how they, all those, and I said they should do this, Dave, way back in season one, when I was complaining, speaking of copy paste, the copy paste mm-hmm. fleet at the end of Picard season one.
Sure.
I said, hey, them Eagle Moss dudes that print the model ships, they have models of all of these ships, every legacy ship. There's no reason why they can't just take one of those, slap some better texture on it, and put that in the show. And they finally started doing that on Picard, in seasons 2 and 3. So
mm-hmm. they need to be paying attention to us, Fathery.
I mean, it's more proof that Alex Kurtzman listens to Tex Trek, but we've suspected that from day one. And it's another case, another example of it being confirmed.
So it seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Keep listening, Alex. We'll give you more good ideas. You can have them all.
Tune in for more tips.
What else do you want to know?
So these characters are moving around through the story. It feels Star Trek-y. What I want to know right now is, are there action sequences in it? Is there ever, because I played a little of the Walking Dead one, and I remember some sort of timed events where you had to get away from zombies. I played one of their early Jurassic Park mm-hmm. ones, and there's a thing where you're having to, you're being chased in a car, and you're trying to, I feel like you're trying to give yourself some kind of medicine because one of those things spit in your face. So there was, anyway, the point is there was some,
a Dilophosaurus.
Yes, I think it was one of those. And you're fumbling to get something while still driving. You're trying to get to some medicine. And so there's a little timed event and a little bit of dexterity button pushing. Does this have anything like that?
Yeah, there are a few action sequences. It's not super combat heavy, but unfortunately, you do get into some sticky situations that you have to blast your way out with a phaser.
That sounds fortunate to me as a viewer.
Yes. But as Starfleet, we think of that as kind of a last resort. See, I told you, I take this game very seriously.
I could put together a montage of last resort Picard firing hundreds of phasers.
Well, that's because he had a midlife crisis in the when they did the TNG movies.
It's time for dune buggies.
Yeah, he was sad that his brother and nephew burnt to death, so he's wanted to swing around on vines and engineering like Tarzan and drive dune buggies in the desert.
It's one of those things that if you tried to, if you want to say that that was the psychological motivation, with a little pushing and prodding, you can make that work.
It'll make you slap on a leather jacket and insurrect against Starfleet.
So yes, you get some phaser fire. Mm-hmm. Do you ever fly a ship?
You pilot shuttlecrafts, and it's like a actual like type six I know it's not like a real thing, it's an imaginary thing from a TV show, but it looks like how the type six shuttle looked in the 90s on TV. It's like identical. Mm-hmm. It's really cool to like get to drive one of those around. In the phaser combat, it doesn't feel like you're like a badass. Like, and if like sometimes I love Star Trek Online, and mm-hmm. before I talk about like the phaser combat, I do want to acknowledge Matthew Averett, one of our patrons, giving a very generous super chat of $10. And he's asking, does anyone remember the Armada games? Personally, I wouldn't mind a modern Armada game for console, just saying. I remember those, Matthew, but I didn't actually play Star Trek Armada. But I'm aware of what you're talking about. Dave, did you play Armada?
I saw it played, but never played it myself. This was closer to like real-time strategy or fleet combat, maybe.
It was a ship combat game.
Yeah, ship combat. And I remember they looked pretty cool. Like, it's the other side of Star Trek. It's the kind of action adventure, mm-hmm. submarine warfare, tactical side of it. I always remember it looked cool. I just didn't get around to it.
The phaser combat in this game, though, it doesn't feel like you're like a badass superhero just like mowing people down. Right. But it also doesn't feel like you're just totally overwhelmed, like a little wimp. Like, the phaser feels powerful. It's just kind of, you just have to, take time to like aim it, and don't like stick your head out from cover too long, and stuff like that. So I think it was very well balanced, I suppose, is what I'm mm-hmm. trying to say. It was a good balance, and on that note, just the way that you have to make decisions. A lot of times, someone will ask you a question, and you have a timer. Sometimes you have more time, sometimes you have less time. But I never felt like I was too rushed. It always felt like the perfect amount of time for me to understand the question and understand the options, but that was about it. And I think that was pretty perfect. They got like the perfect amount of time in there, because a lot of the stuff I would probably just sit on for like 30 minutes and think, what would be the best thing to do? And that's not real life. That wouldn't be an immersive experience. When people are like asking you these questions, you're going to have to make decisions on the fly. If you're first officer, if you're, this lower decks guy who's trying to, fix this engine part before it explodes. And so you do have to make choices. Sometimes you have to make like really tough choices fast, but I always felt like I had enough time to at least wrap my head around the question and the answers. And so that I think that was perfect. That was the perfect balance there.
Given the kind of game it is, that's actually probably one of the most important balances for the game to find.
Agreed. Yeah.
But yeah, that sounds cool. I've experienced games where the dialogue trees don't have timers. I've experienced games where they do. And although I can get anxious playing those ones where they do, again, usually if I understand the choices I'm making, it's that I'm happy to have a little bit of pressure. It kind of energizes the scene. Mm-hmm. And if most games are doing things right, you're never going to choose something so wrong that you're like, should we steer the ship into the sun? that's not really going to be an option. You might screw something up, though. And it's interesting because these games kind of force you to sort of to deal with that, to say that like it's never going to be a string of perfect choices. You usually have to make one or two that you maybe lament afterwards, and then you have to course correct. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, it was often tense, but it was never too stressful. It does really make you feel the consequences of your choices at times. Like, there's one point in the game where, if you continue this mission to save these people, this other person is going to get like really hurt. And I was like, yeah, we need to save lives. Okay. Now that person was horrifically injured, went blind, and spends the rest of the game walking around with a Geordi visor because of your choice, because of my choice.
Oh, that does sound anxiety inducing. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
now that I've completed the game, it's like, there were people who lived and died because of choices I made.
That's the job, right? That's Starfleet.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I think that's really cool. I think it's cool that, I can complete the game and look back and be like, oh wow, there was some serious consequence to some of that stuff.
Father, could you have saved that guy?
Not at that point, but someone would have died in that situation. But yeah, I don't want to give away too much, but like these characters, these characters are interesting. There's actually like, there's a romantic element in there. One of the characters, Diaz actually has like a, you can build a romance with an NPC in the game. I think maybe you can with Riddick too. There are two characters, both were other women. So I guess there's a queer element to it. But they're two women NPCs were both like really flirty towards her. And I was trying to be nice towards both of them, but like nothing happened with either. I don't know if that is like a possible ending in the game or something. So another reason to kind of want to go back and replay it. As the new person on the bridge, as Commander Riddick, you know, some people might not like you. Some people might have been like, you know, the captain should have promoted me instead of bringing someone new onto the ship and stuff like that. But, you know, you can make choices to befriend some of them. But, you know, maybe someone else is not going to like you. Maybe to make this person happy, you got to make this other person unhappy.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like they're trying to give you the command decision difficulties.
Joanne Robertson, our live audience, watched a lot of the streaming footage that I put out on YouTube, and she said that I had a serious kill or stun moment. Yeah, there's this one moment. She knows exactly what I'm talking about. Like, in the heat of the moment, I was under attack. I had to pull out my phaser, and I had like the option stun or kill. And I meant to hit stun. I hit kill on by mistake. But you know, that's like a real life thing that could happen in that situation. So,
oh man,
and it felt appropriate.
That's cool. They didn't beam you out just in time, like when Data was gonna kill the most toys guy.
No, but yeah. So that's fun. Just knowing like, oh, there's gonna be weight to these choices. I mean, some of them obviously have more of an impact than others. They're early in the game. The captain allows Commander Riddick to, you know, give the order for the ship to take off at warp, and you can kind of choose what her go to warp catchphrase is gonna be. There's like some options.
Oh, that's kind of fun. That's a nice lightweight sort of fluffy one.
And speaking of that, they also do the lower decks concept is very well realized. Like, you know, like characters talk about stuff when, you know, when you're down in the lower decks, they talk about stuff like, oh yeah, like people on the bridge make bad choices, and then it's up to us in the lower decks to, you know, fix things and, you know, do the hard work and stuff like that. You like, you do kind of feel like the different culture on the ship, but still, you know, we're all on the same team. We're all Starfleet. And I respect this game tremendously for actually understanding the distinction between enlisted personnel and commissioned personnel, which basically all of Star Trek, except for Deep Space Nine, and even Deep Space Nine sometimes couldn't get that straight. But yeah, like, you know, the non-commissioned officers are, yeah, they are like a lot more blue collar. They're a lot more like O'Brien. And then there's a young ensign in engineering, Ensign Calloway. And you kind of see like the difference between a young ensign and a petty officer. Cause like the young ensign, you're just like, well, I went to the academy and I, you know, tried to make all the good grades in school. And I'm, you know, I'm a bit more of like, you know, the educated academic, you know, I want to be like the best of the best, almost a bit elite. Type.
The super type A's.
Yeah. And you know, you meet this young ensign Calloway or Galloway, I can't remember, but you meet him as Commander Riddick, and you know, he's kind of like, oh my goodness, golly jeepers, you're the first officer. I'm gonna, you know, kiss ass and suck up to you and everything. And then that same dude, you know, when you're Diaz, it's like he's like giving you orders and stuff, bossing you around and stuff. So
oh yeah, that's interesting. That's kind of cool. So it's, you know, if I was talking about a Star Trek game, one thing I would not guess it would showcase is how the kind of the different strata of command levels and how they interact and, you know, the sort of the power structure of a ship. That's pretty cool that it can even, I mean, I know it's not like some super deep dive into it, but that's cool that it kind of shows you that.
Yeah. People working on this game either have served on ships in the Navy or they've talked to people who have served on ships in the Navy.
They did their research.
Yeah. It seems to really get, or at least like what I want out of that. What I think, Gene Roddenberry and Gene Koons and all those guys in the 60s who served in the military in World War II, kind of like what they were thinking.
Fathery, are there puzzle elements in the game? Any like stuff where you got to figure some like little puzzle or rewire something?
Nothing too complicated. There's a few like mini games, and a lot of them are repetitive. So after you figure them out, you kind of you're able to repeat it and keep doing it. Diaz gets more of that stuff because, you know, he's always trying to like tech the tech. Whereas Riddick is more about like making like, you know, the big choices. You have Diaz doing more like, oh, I gotta, you know, work this transporter pad so I can actually beam these people up and they don't die in transport. And, you know, there's little mini games on the transporter. You have to do things to like reroute power and stuff like that. But if you're an experienced gamer, nothing in it is too challenging or frustrating. A lot of it's also just like scanning with your tricorder, but they found a way to make that not that boring. I don't really like games where you have to scan a lot. Like I was frustrated the first time I played Metroid Prime. I know you like those new Metroid games, but in like 2001 or 2002, whenever like Metroid Prime came out, I was all excited for it. It's like, oh, cool. Like Nintendo made a new Metroid game and it was developed here in Austin, Texas. That's so awesome. I can't wait to play this game. I'm looked forward to it for like 2 years, put in the disc, and like immediately when I'm like scanning doors and stuff, I'm like, well, this was disappointing as hell. I only played like 20
you don't
minutes
have
of
to
it.
Scan the doors.
No, like, but, I think like to open the door, like you had to like scan it or something. I don't know.
It was, oh yeah, it was not like early on you do. Otherwise, it just builds up the lore in there.
I like using a tricorder though, and I'm like flipping to like different menus on the tricorder, and it looks like a Berman era tricorder. It looks like
that's pretty cool.
The tricorders looked on Voyagers, like that. That's your tricorder.
I think they got a little bit better about some of that stuff in the kind of more action adventure oriented Batman Arkham games, where it'd be like, okay, you got to go in a room and find some clues.
It's closer
and you
to
do
that.
Some little simple mini game where you like sort of tune something in, or you refine an image in front of you, and you kind of get a cool clue out of it.
That's a great example. Yeah. And like you can like scan things through like, you know, okay, I'm going to scan, I'm just spitballing, but like the Delta radiation. Oh, I'm going to scan, you know, like whatever rays or whatever. And you kind of get like, you get different looks. You get like different, like you're looking like different spectrums. I don't know. It's hard. It's a very visual thing. It's hard to describe, but.
When you accomplish that, Fathery, will it then like open up new dialogue or options and stuff like that for you? Like, so in the game, say there's some part where you got to find something with your tricorder. What happens when you find it?
Oh yeah. It'll trigger like the next thing or something. The
scene moves on or like, okay, we can launch the shuttlecraft or we can open the door.
And it is very, very linear. I know like you do get times to explore, and later in the game, you go to like some really interesting environments. I think the way that they build up to some of the stuff is cool, because you can't be like too crazy right off the bat, or it wouldn't feel like Star Trek. You know, Star Trek often looks like it's shot on a soundstage, because it mostly is. So, you know, you couldn't have like all these like super crazy video game environments right at the very beginning. You do kind of get into that stuff later, but the way that they build up to it is super cool and feels very appropriate. But if you want like the open world adventure where you can go and explore anything, then Star Trek Online is probably more your speed. You know, Star Trek Online, you can go to Earth Space Dock, you can go to Deep Space Nine, you can go to Vulcan, you can go to Kronos, you can go to Andoria. This is, you know, you're confined to wherever the story wants you to be. And there's also no chapter select. Even though so, like, it's great for replaying. You can't just go and pick like an individual chapter. You have to start over from the beginning and work your way through it. And the chapters are, most of them are like 10 or 20 minutes. There's 40 total. But yeah, you can, you know, if you're playing, if you only want to play a little bit at a time, you know, each chapter is only going to take you around 15 minutes.
Nice. Little bite-sized chunks. Fathery, how's the music in it? Any good?
The music? It didn't,
noticeable?
It doesn't always really stand out, but there were a couple of moments where I was like, damn, like the music, the score is like really good. It always felt like appropriate, but like there were times where it got a little like James Horner-y. It didn't like copy the exact notes the moment I'm talking about. It does at one other point, but we're in like this really weird alien environment, and it reminded me, oh, this is kind of what it sounded like in Wrath of Khan when they beam down to SETI Alpha 5. And then there's another moment where it's like, oh, this is kind of like, you know, like Ron Jones, like early TNG when the music was a bit more dramatic. It's like this has some strong like Ron Jones vibes to it. So it always felt Star Trek.
Nice. It seems like from what you're describing, this would be like, if I were to compare it to Trek things that already exist, movies, TVs, novels, that it's almost more like playing through a novel, because I think the story runs a little deeper than maybe an episode, a single episode would.
Yeah, it feels like it would be like a small movie, if that makes sense. It either feels like a huge episode or a small movie.
Okay.
It felt like if they were going to do like a Star Trek movie with mainly new characters and with it's only going to have like a $80 or $90 million budget.
It should have an unlimited budget though. It's but you know what I've
noticed? I was saying the number of characters, the number of sets, the number of like that type of stuff would be like a little limited.
One thing I did notice, we've probably talked about this before, is like, you know, they did Buffy comic books at one point, and they definitely did the, oh, well, you know, without a budget, we can do anything. Let's have this spell that makes Dawn 20 feet tall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it didn't feel like the TV show. It felt too
And then it didn't feel like the TV show, because you're mentally, you're like, that's not a thing that happens on Buffy stories.
Yeah, this always felt Star Trek, except for with two instances, and that's with the two of the, like, the new alien races. They didn't exactly feel, like, I wouldn't just think Star Trek. If I saw like a picture of them, I'd be like, oh, they look like generic sci-fi video game alien. They look like they could be in Mass Effect, basically.
Mm-hmm. I remember reading this was weird. It was a novel that was, I think it was set in the Kelvin setting, right? And the novel was, I think, written before the movie had come out, and you can tell it doesn't quite know what it's going to be like. It doesn't know how kind of pop those Kelvin movies would be. And the aliens and stuff in it, they felt more like the Star Trek aliens in the books I read in the 80s were, which is to say, more like some people who were fans of sci-fi fiction, kind of the deeper cut you get in more serious, slightly more hard sci-fi, how they would describe aliens. And I was like, this is so weird, because I know this is supposed to be the Kelvin versus Kirk and Spock and stuff like that, but the aliens they're running into are like sort of serious aliens. Is that like how the aliens you're describing here, where they just don't quite feel like, Trek screen aliens?
I'm trying to figure out what book set in the Kelvin universe came out before the movie now, because I don't know
if it came out before. I believe it came out after like the second or even third movie. It was a delayed release.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thing. That was like Alan Dean Foster wrote, I think David Mack wrote. Yeah, there were several books that were delayed for a few years.
Yeah, that's right. And it was like Alan Dean Foster, okay. And that's why I wasn't
surprised.
Those were written
after the first movie had come out, though.
Oh, was
I remember
it?
Correctly, yeah. But they were delayed for a long time.
Boy, does it not really quite get the voice down. But anyway, not to sidetrack onto them. Anyway, it wasn't that they were bad. I was just like, there's a weird mixture of tones here.
Yeah.
And the aliens were part of that. I remember it. I was like, oh, this is an interesting alien. I don't know that it feels Star Trek-y,
yeah,
but it's interesting.
No, they didn't look Star Trek, but like their culture and stuff, like it made sense within the Star Trek universe. And to be fair, all three animated Star Trek shows have all had creatures that look more unusual than these people.
I suppose the more Star Trek things there are, Discovery and all the newer shows, yes. Animated Short Trek, the broader what we think a Star Trek alien is, the broader what that definition will get.
Yeah, but the coolest stuff in the game for me, though, is when it like brought, the familiar things I never thought I would see again, when it like brought them back. Like, who the hell ever thought there'd be a Centaur class ship in a video game? Like that's just insane.
That's very specific. And it's like, it's the main ship, you said, right?
Right. And a lot of like, dedicated Star Trek viewers probably, they couldn't tell you which ship is the Centaur class ship. It's not like a class ship. It's not like it's like a popular ship. It's not like it's like the Excelsior or anything like that. It's like, it's a bit of a deep cut. And there's a really awesome character who shows up in the game and becomes a big part of the story that I was thrilled to see, that I was not expecting. And it's someone from season one of TNG who we haven't seen since then, but it's someone who I always thought was cool ever since I was a little kid. And I'm holy hell, this guy is doing like all the cool shit I always knew he was capable of.
So this is not just like Harry Mudd or something like that. This is like a character that has not been recreated since then. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. We also get to, come across Riker in Command of the Titan, which it was funny. I'm playing the game. I'm like, oh, look, it's the Titan. Such a beautiful ship. And then thinking like somehow this is going to turn into the Enterprise G at some point. And I was like, that still does not make sense in my head. There's the Titan, the Titan A, the Enterprise G is all the same ship. But, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. That's canonical. That's the reality. So
now, a few minutes ago, Matthew Averett asked just whether it's a game worth playing.
Yeah,
and I think we're probably going to say that you liked it, but before you get to like, I don't know, sort of like summations or maybe into slightly spoilery stuff, I did want to quick ask, what didn't you like, or was there stuff that frustrated you?
The only thing that bothered me in the game was it got a little glitchy a couple of times, which was unfortunate. The one recurring glitch wasn't too big of a problem. It happened maybe less than a dozen times over 12 hours. So it happened less frequently than once per hour, I guess. But
I have to assume some of that stuff is going to get patched. We're like week one of this game. I hope it'll get patched.
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm always turning on my PlayStation and it's like, oh, it's downloaded the latest update for some game.
Not every game has, like the budget to maintain support like that after development. This is a smaller game, so I don't know if it will or not. The frequent glitch would just be like in the dialogue, someone would be saying a line of dialogue, then they kind of like restart. It's really weird. It's like someone would just be talking and they would be telling you a line of dialogue, and then all of a sudden it'd be like someone was just talking and they give you like this line of dialogue, and all of a sudden it just kind of repeats themselves or does like this weird stutter thing.
Father,
like
I don't think you just did that intentionally, but when you said someone was talking.
I did.
You did do it intentionally. That was like, that was pretty cool. It even seemed like a video game audio glitch. That was
like when it
very
happens,
impressive.
I'm like, was that intentional or is that part of the game?
That's naturalistic speech. It's just to show how we sometimes stumble over our words.
But no, it was a glitch in the game.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a glitch in the game.
And then so this really sucked. When I was playing on the third night I was playing, my final of my 3 4-hour sessions of playing through this game, mm-hmm. I'm like getting into like the last 2 hours of the game, and I'm having to sneak around, do like some stealth stuff around like some bad guys, and all of a sudden it's like, wait, why do I see captions of people talking, but I can't hear them talking? And then I see like, oh, there's enemies around me talking to each other, but like there's no dialogue. And I kept playing the game. It's like the dialogue just like dropped out of the game. And it was super annoying. And I actually had to restart the game. And there were people watching my stream. And the way that, because I was doing it all off of the PlayStation 5 and streaming directly to YouTube from the PlayStation. And the way that it works there is if you close the game, it deactivates your broadcast. So I had to shut down that stream and then start again as a new YouTube video. And that was very, very annoying. Like in that like immediate moment, like all my enthusiasm for the game evaporated. And it was very frustrating. And it's like, man, like people were watching and now we had to stop this. Now I have to play this over. And it's like, you know, some people would come and find the new video, but I know there were some people who didn't. And so it you know, kind of messed up their experience. It messed up like my experience. It kind of derailed the whole like, you know, linear story I was really connected with. So that was frustrating. I kind of felt bad because I was like, I kept like wanting to complain about it while I was playing. It's like, I should get over this. It's not like a big deal, but like, man, like that really like messed things up.
That's totally worth bringing up. I will say I've seen patches for small studios. I suspect that will get patched.
The other issue was, then after that, when I got to like the final cutscene of the game just crashed again. And so then I had to start like another video just to show like the last 15 minutes of the game.
So we're not talking, what was it, Cyberpunk, that game as far as glitches go, but not without some glitches.
Overall, it was a very stable game. And I would tell people, you probably don't need to be too worried about that. I think it might have been because I was playing it as, you know, one uninterrupted session on the PlayStation. I was also like streaming and stuff like that. Yeah, I got to point out Snoopy McQueen has popped by with a very generous $5 super sticker. So thank you for that, Snoopy. We appreciate it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Hell yeah. Thank you.
But yeah, so the there were a couple of hiccups in the game, but nothing too major. And that's something I've actually seen that issue in like other games. It only started with like the last couple generations of games, but that's happened before where I was playing something, all of a sudden like the dialogue just like cuts out. Like there's no more dialogue. Like some of the audio file is missing.
Yeah, it's weird. I've seen glitches like that, or you know, audio dropouts and stuff like that. It's not ideal. Sometimes they release games a little bit early, or maybe it's just like got some compatibility issues with some of your hardware. I don't know.
But beyond that, there is nothing frustrating in the game. I
didn't get stuck and you're like, oh my god, I'm never gonna get past this Borg Queen.
The first night I played, after about 4 hours, I got in like a room and I was like, what? I've scanned everything with my tricorder, right? What the hell else is in here that I need to scan? But I was like, you know, I've been playing for like 4 hours, I'll probably just like call it a night and come back tomorrow. And then like when I came back the next day, like I found it like almost immediately. I was like, oh yeah, it was like right there. Like I don't know why I didn't notice that last time.
That's such a classic video game thing. The you put it down, you come back, and the thing that you had just been banging your head against the previous day, you just knock out in your first encounter.
And then
there's something to be said for being fresh.
There's another instance that came later when I was walking around this planet, you know, we beamed down to this planet to investigate something. I'm like, what do I have to scan now? And like Joel was in the audience. He was like, you know, try that crystal up there. And like, so he was like trying to help me like, you know, keep track of things I hadn't scanned. So thank you to our regular viewer, Joel, and Joel also helped out when the game crashed. He was sharing links to like the new video on the socials and stuff like that. So thank you, Joel, for helping out with that.
Father, I was just now looking it up. I was curious, speaking of the difference between AAA titles and smaller ones like this. If I'm not mistaken, this has a somewhat lower price point instead of being like $60.
Or 70 these like days on the
60 or 70.
70 on the PS5 and Series X. But yeah, this is a $40 game. So
right. So yeah, and I bought some really great indie games over the years for like $15 or something, like as a starting price. So this is that somewhere in between.
I mean,
more polished.
I think it justifies the $40 price point, but if you wait a year, this game will probably be $15. But people should buy it now so that they make more of these, you know?
Yeah, that's one of the things I want to get to. I want to ask you if there's any spoilery stuff you want to get into, Fathery, but then if not, I don't know if we're kind of like getting towards wrap-up thoughts. And also, I want to know if you kind of like would like to see this format again, and like, if so, kind of what areas of the Star Trek universe you think would be fun to explore with it.
Okay, well, I'm gonna go into like a little bit of light spoilers now. I'm not gonna give away like too much big stuff, but some light spoilers here. The character I mentioned that I was really hoping I would see again, that I always wanted to see again and never thought I would, and they made him such a awesome badass in this game. Mm-hmm. The Ferengi episode, The Last Outpost, you know, the terrible episode. We all hated how the Ferengi were originally introduced in The Next Generation. You know, season one of TNG, it's rough. But Portal of the T'Khan Empire, that last guardian of the T'Khan Empire, who was there like kind of like judging the Ferengi and the Federation both.
Yeah,
he returns in this game, and he is like, you like, okay, like season one of TNG, they couldn't like show like, okay, what actually was like the capabilities of the T'Khan. You know, they're supposed to be like this. They were described as being godlike during the height of their empire when they controlled the galaxy. What? And so here, like through their last guardian, you'd think, okay, this is only but like a mere fraction of their power. And it's like, wow, this guy is like so badass. He's so cool. He's like almost scary how powerful he is. And he's going to either like you or dislike you based on how you interact with him. And so that was really cool. Joanne agrees that he is badass.
Yeah, that is pretty cool, and that is a deep cut, yes. Man. That is that's
and
pretty
he
out
look
there.
Like he looks like that same design. He's got like the big Christopher Walken hair going on. He's still got like his big spear stick thing. Like they treat it all serious. They weren't like, this is the 21st century. People aren't gonna buy this dumb 80s shit. It's like, no, like they took all of that and they made it look badass in a modern day presentation, and I love that. I love that shit.
Yeah, that's a big thing for me too, Fathery. Is I'm like, you don't have to like, you know, we saw this, how this was kind of played out with superhero movies and things like that, where with the early X-Men movies, they were scared to do costumes. And I'm
they joke about it.
They made a joke about it.
You actually and I'm like, go out in these things? What would you prefer? Yellow spandex?
Mm-hmm. We'll knock at the fandom there. But, and yes, you cannot like just quite do a cheap leotard like you would have in a high school theater production. Like, I think we all kind of knew that. And so, like, but yeah, let the designers go to town, and then you get the MCU, and I guess they've had some success with that or something. But like, that's just a random example. It's like, I like when you don't like nudge, nudge, wink, wink, wasn't that hokey. Instead, take something old, maybe slightly recontextualize it, but without making fun of it, find what's cool about it, lean into the cool stuff, and update it. And it sounds like they did that. It sounds like they did a really good job of it.
Yeah. So I was very happy with that. And then I guess the other light spoiler thing that I'm going to throw in there, I don't want to give too much of it away, but there is like a little bit of like on board, like paranoia, where it's like, you know, who do I, can I trust like these other people on the ship? I don't want to say exactly what it was, because I kind of had like a fun time like speculating like what the hell could be going on here. But it's that made it a lot of fun. And plus, you know, you're the new person on the ship as Riddick. So you don't really know these people that well. And like, you don't really know like this captain, who we haven't talked about it at all. But Captain Solano, he's kind of a tough nut to crack, because as I'm playing the game, I'm like, okay, this guy seems like he means well, but he also seems like, you know, he's kind of ambitious. He seems like he can be a bit of a rule breaker. Is he a rule breaker like Kirk? Like, he'll break the rules, you know, he'll steal the Enterprise to go get Spock, but he's still, you know, for the most part, a Boy Scout? Or is he more of like a full-on badmiral? And like, you know, do I need to trust the captain? Should I disobey orders I don't agree with and go against them? Should, you know, what should I do here? And so that was also a lot of fun to play that. And it felt like something from Star Trek. It felt like you're in a Star Trek story.
Father, I think I saw an image of him somewhere, and he looked to me like the evil dad in the Invincible comic and cartoon.
Yeah,
people had seen that. He's got kind of a big mustache and the salt and pepper hair and all that.
He looks like Shax from Lower Decks, kind of.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. He looked a little intimidating and scary, and I was like, oh, that's good. That's encouraging to hear that there's kind of a little bit of this aura of what to make of this guy.
Now, if I was gonna cast this in live action, I think he could still pull it off at his old age now, but Sam Elliott is ideally like Sam Elliott like 20 or 30 years ago would have been perfect casting.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, that's who I'd go with. No, I couldn't get him. I guess J.K. Simmons. He can do the salt and pepper stash. But yeah, so that's cool that you know, it kind of has that you know, like who should I trust, who should I not trust type element to it as well.
That's cool. So any other reveals you got for us, Fathery? Little light reveals?
I don't know, like,
anything that jumped out is like, oh, this might be a fun little tease for people to know about.
Well, some of the ideas they come up with, were very unique, but they were like, okay, that is like a really cool idea to have in the Star Trek universe. Like, at one point in the game, some characters have to escape a ship, and there's no escape pods on the ship. So it's like, oh, I guess we're going to have to build an escape pod out of junk we find in the cargo bay and ride it out. And it's, and so, okay, like they do that and just stuff like that. I was like, yeah, like that's kind of cool. Getting to know these new aliens, you know, you get to meet some characters on both sides, and you do kind of get have an opportunity to choose like which group you want to support that you're going to side with. At the same time, though, you become friends with some of them on both sides. And, you know, you kind of see both points of view. So it for sure has that Star Trek element represented in the game, too, where, you know, you kind of take like a more nuanced look at situations. It's not always like black and white, and, you know, trying to approach everyone fairly and compassionately and be empathetic to their situation. So,
yeah, I like the sound of that. I think I'm going to maybe get this week, Father. I kind of want to play it.
Yeah, I think it'd be, you know, for you, Dave, I think this is more a game for what you would be looking for than for me. But I mean, I loved it myself. And, you know, I like a good short game, too. I like a linear story focused game. And I love the $40 price point. I think that was a fair price.
So, Father, if they were to do a follow up to this, let's say it didn't have the same characters, although, well, I guess I don't want to ask you too much because I don't want to ask about how things came out. But what other areas, like, you've got to like want to be able to walk around on DS9, right?
I would love to go to. Yeah, if they made a sequel to this and, you know, maybe have some of the same characters, some new characters on the Resolute, or it could be a different ship. It doesn't have to be the Resolute. But I'd like to see them go to DS9. Let me walk around that station. You know, give me options. Have me have like a dialogue with Quark and Morn. I don't know how I love. If anyone out there plays Star Trek Online, if you have not gone to DS9 and talked to Morn, dude, I don't even want to tell you what it is. But go to DS9 and talk to Morn. It is awesome.
Yeah, I was very very happy when you told me about that. It's good.
But yeah, I think that would be great, though. I hope that we haven't seen the last of Dramatic Labs. I think they have a lot to offer Star Trek. I would love if they did. I don't know, maybe like, I know with Telltale at one point they had like a business model of doing like, you could buy like individual episodes.
Oh, that's right. So it was like made it like you it would be cheap to get chapters yeah. 1 and 2. Or
yeah, what? And like on the developer side, it's cheaper too because you don't have to build the entire game. This it took them a while to release this. I think it was announced 2 years ago. So you know it was in development for a year probably before they announced it. So it took like 3 years to get this game out.
I forgot that I do remember it was taking a while, but I guess I'd forgotten it was that long. But it's not like it's particularly, at least as far as this part goes, it's not like it's reliant on like, oh, it ties into something on Discovery or Strange New Worlds. It's its own thing.
No,
so.
And for the most part, it doesn't really take much from any of the new shows other than some, like they definitely like they mentioned the phrase Lower Decks more than we used to say before the last few years.
Right now it's kind of part of the understood lexicon.
So it has that. And then I guess some of the, when it does get to some of the big stuff towards the end of the game, some of it does kind of, just like on a visual sense, it does feel like a bit more like you're watching Discovery than like you're watching TNG. But overall, for the most part, it feels like, you know, a story that would have been made 20 or 30 years ago.
Like 90s Trek?
Yeah. Or specifically kind of like the late 90s, kind of like TNG movie era, like that vibe, that style.
That sounds pretty appealing, actually. I mean, honestly, there was a little bit of difficulty with me sometimes when I would be frustrated with something and say Discovery or Picard, and I'd go watch like a really amazing Deep Space Nine or revisit some Next Generation or Voyager, and I'd be like, I don't want to be the old stuff is better guy, but sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't rely on, you know, too many member berries. Like, you know, a lot of people have, and I think justifiably so to an extent, but a lot of people have accused Picard season 3. Like, it's really just, okay, Riker and Portal and Spock. And that's it. That's the only, like, familiar faces. Everything else is new.
It sounds like it overtly avoided that, to be honest.
Yeah, and I respect that. I like the balance of new and familiar. And I should point out that the Spock voice actor did a very good job. And, you know, like we kind of live in this era of, should they just like use AI to recreate like you know, old voices from like actors who are no longer living and stuff like that. And like, I gotta say, like, I think like this guy did like an adequate job. There were a couple moments where like I could tell it wasn't Leonard Nimoy, but you know what? When I hear Ethan Peck or Zachary Quinto talk as Spock, I can tell it's not Leonard Nimoy then too. Like this guy got a lot closer than them. And he also got a lot closer when, you know, when Star Trek Prodigy took all those like Spock lines of dialogue from like different movies, different episodes.
Oh yeah,
they copy and pasted it all together on the holodeck for Dal, so Spock could have an inspirational speech towards Dal. Like, that was kind of a really cool experiment, but it did sound like, oh yeah, you know, it was obvious. You could tell there were just like changes in the audio quality. Like, that came from the Wrath of Khan, that came from Star Trek 09, that came from the original series. Like, you could tell what era it was recorded in based on the quality of the audio. This sounded better than that. This just sounded like a natural voice speaking naturally.
Well, when you have an individual voice actor and not some edited together clips, you're going to get a consistency. And I watched some clip that showed I heard just a little bit of him talk. And he had the kind of deep tenor of older Leonard Nimoy, yeah, or was able to emulate it pretty well. I almost always would like that. I don't mind soundalikes in these games. Sometimes they're not as good as others, but like that one sounded pretty good.
Yeah. And then you get Jonathan Frakes as Riker, because Jonathan Frakes never turns down Star Trek. He's either directed or appeared in as an actor in every single Star Trek show, basically, except for the original and the animated series.
They probably don't do this fathery, but I would have killed if they had showed him get into a chair Riker style.
I guess he hasn't gotten into Prodigy yet, but that show ain't over. So hopefully we get Riker there.
He needs to make a show.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that Jonathan Frakes wants to do is, you know, if they do like the Star Trek Legacy show that Terry Metalis wants to do, Jonathan Frakes wants to get into the development as one of the producers on it. So
they'd probably be wise to go ahead and just greenlight that part, no matter what.
They ain't greenlighting anything right now. So
okay, well, yeah, whenever it happens, I'm not talking about crossing picket lines, yeah, Father. Whenever it happens, though, they should bring in Frakes. I'm pretty sure that would be an asset. Let's see. Oh, so let's talk. Do you want to talk about the comic real quick?
Yeah. So there is a comic book from IDW. It's only 5 issues, and it's like, you know, it's like one of those like modern comics. It only has like 20 pages in it.
So they move along briskly.
Yes. So you can read the whole thing, and I mean, I'm a slow reader, and I read it all in 2 hours. So it's a 1 or 2 hour read. It feels like an episode of Star Trek. But I liked the comic, and I'm glad I read it before I played the game. So I do recommend if people do want to read it, that you read it before you play the game, because you're coming onto the ship at kind of an interesting time. The ship has just been it's been damaged. The previous first officer has gone on to something else, and they're bringing you on as like the new first officer. And you know, when you read the comic, you're on the ship as the original first officer. Previous first officer.
So this is before one of the characters shows, but I'm betting engineer guy Diaz is still there.
I didn't know Diaz from the comic, so I don't. I guess he wasn't in there, or if he was, I didn't.
It's like he just doesn't play a role. Yeah. Interesting.
Or maybe he was there, and I didn't know I was supposed to like remember him. But like all the other like senior bridge officers, they are all in there. I was reading it. I was kind of thinking like, oh, this guy must be like the main character in the video game, because it seems to be really focused on the first officer. But no, when you first start playing the game, though, they tell you like what happened to him and what happened, like the reason why their ship is being repaired and refitted right now. So all that stuff is kind of spoiled in the opening of the game. So if you're going to read the comic first. But even if you go into it after the game, I think it still kind of informs a lot. I kind of struggled with the first issue getting connected to these characters. You know, it's like, okay, there's like a Bolian and he's operations. And then, okay, this guy is the science officer, and he's kind of like all about science, and he can be like a bit of a prick if, you know, he's just focused on the science and getting results. But like none of the characters like really, I don't know. I didn't really like any of them immediately. But then as I read more and more of the comic, I got more and more immersed into like the ship, into the Resolute. And I think that's what they were trying to do there. And the after you kind of see how these people interact with each other and interact with, you know, the protagonists in the comic, and then with the protagonists, plural, in the game, that was kind of the appeal to me. It's just like seeing, okay, like their dynamics and their kind of those arcs, like, okay, these people are like building a friendship. These people are kind of, it's a little rocky with them. And every issue of the comic, they have a point in there where the first officer has to make some type of like big choice or big decision. And it doesn't like shine too big of a light on it, but it was like enough where I kind of pointed, like by issue 2, I was like, I see what you're doing. And so that's kind of a similar experience to how the game is played.
Okay.
So it kind of gets like, because, you know, first officer, you know, there is like a lot of decisions you have to make in your day-to-day job performing duties as that role. So
that's interesting. So the comic actually does kind of reflect something of the you know, the focus on decision-making and that the game has.
Yeah. And then it did this other cool thing where they bring back an alien species that I always wanted to see more of from a TNG episode, Suddenly Human. They're the Talarans or Talarians. They had a border war with the Federation, like the Cardassians. I always kind of imagined it was like the same war. They just like everyone like go attack the Federation border. You know, the Cardassians are attacking, so we should attack too. But they had that boy who they raised because he was a human boy. But when his parents were killed in a battle, like they brought him into their culture and they adopted him and raised him because that was kind of like their tradition. You know, we'll like take war orphans. They did that in The Mandalorian too. That's a thing in the other Star franchise now. But yeah, that's what Star Trek did in Suddenly Human. So we go and we meet those people and we have an adventure with them. And it kind of frustrated me in the comic where eventually you do run into that kid again. I was like, really? We finally meet these people again. And then like the one dude we know of in their society is who we cross paths with again. But but they did a really good job writing his character. And like the stuff that like Picard went through with him in Suddenly Human, like it stuck and it made like a big difference on him as a person all these years later. You know, this is like, 15 years later or so. And so I was like, okay, that is actually cool that we got like that follow up. And it made me think of you, Dave, because that's something like you talk about, like, oh yeah, you know, this is an interesting episode of Star Trek. It was very interesting. It'd be fun to come back and revisit and see these people again and see what happens here. And it was, it was a case of like, oh yeah, it's one of the times when they finally did that. So
yeah, it sounds like the only downside is they did a little bit of the it's a small world thing where you kind of bump into the same representative and not like just somebody. But yeah, no, that's cool. I will try and catch that.
Yeah. And they talk about, you know, what were those dudes doing during the Dominion War and stuff like that. Leia Brahms is also in the comic and has some history with this character, with the captain character, Solano. And it was also cool to see like, oh yeah, Leia Brahms is probably not married to Geordi and someone else is the mother of those girls, because we've all agreed, the entire internet has collectively agreed that was a really creepy relationship and we don't want to see Geordi and Leia Brahms together. So that felt like a big win. I know like the comics and the games, everything, it's like, this is all non-canonical, but you know, it's still fun to see it represented there. And what else about the comic? The first issue, it was, and Dave, I think you even tried the first issue back when it came out a few months ago, but yeah, I can see like the first issue could be like, it's a little hard to get into. It starts off, you know, very
touch dry.
It's very dry. It's very stuffy. There's a lot of like, oh, they're talking about, you know, like a new strand of dilithium that was just discovered. And you know, why does it have like this atomic structure that makes it work better in warp reactors and stuff like that? So you it kind of gets into some of the like the weird like technobabble territory of Star Trek.
A few of the early IDW comics did that, and what I remember is like they tended to do a thing where like if I kind of saw it through, stayed the course, they usually got pretty solidly satisfying. But yeah, it's sometimes I'm like, you gotta remember to have a little bit of that human element that sort of draws you into a Star Trek story.
Yeah, so I do recommend the comic, though. I was very happy with how it ended. It was a fun story. It had a great ending. There were a couple of times it kind of made me scratch my head. And there was one thing in particular about the ending where I was like, man, I loved this ending, except for like this one thing you mentioned here on like the second to last page. Like, why do you have to throw that in there? But now that like, I played the game, I'm like, okay, they needed that in there so that it made sense in the game. I kind of get it. Can't blame that too much on the comic. So it was a fun comic. I don't think I'll ever reread it. Maybe if I replay this game in a few years and I want to revisit the comic too, maybe then. But yeah, I'm glad that I did read it before I started the game.
Okay.
And I have those issues, Dave, if you want to read them.
Yeah, I'd actually probably like to borrow it from
I think the trade might be out by now. The fifth issue came out, I think, a month ago, so the trade should be out soon.
Sometimes they jump into those pretty quick, so that would be handy. Ideally, you would want the trade out before the video game.
Yeah.
Game, so.
I know who we can talk to about that. If we're done talking about a Resurgence and its tie-in comic book, I should let everyone know what's going on with next week's show. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have a guest on the show. We're going to be talking to Heather Antos. She is currently the editor of the Star Trek comics at IDW Publishing. That's the name of the company.
Awesome.
IDW Publishing. What's their exact title? I don't know.
I'm going to say yes. It's a
IDW.
IDW.
I know, yeah. Like, to some people that means intellectual dark web, but like to the comic book world, that means the IDW comics. They make the Star Trek comics. They make some really damn good Star Trek comics lately, especially. So I'm going to be excited talking to her. There's some great stuff going on in the comics. We got like Ben Sisko coming out of the wormhole, like back from the Prophets. Like that's a comic now.
And a year or so back, we had a really good comic that was all about told from the perspective of Grudge. From Discovery. I mean, that's a nice wide variety. That's a span of styles there.
Yeah, so we're gonna talk to her. We're gonna talk about comics. Dave manages a comic book store. We're gonna try to have Aaron on the show. He draws covers for these IDW Star Trek comics. I'm a pretty devoted comic book reader. So yeah, I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we can get the inside scoop. You know, I don't know if we'll be able to ask her about upcoming stuff or you know, like what it's, I'm sure, just talking about what it's like wrangling a property like Star Trek. And
yeah, she's gonna have stuff to promote.
It's gonna be good
she wants to talk up, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that. And if there are things, you know, other than the shows that y'all want us to talk about, like, you know, right now we have kind of like that rare opportunity when like we're bombarded with so much new Star Trek content, so many new shows, so many new episodes. It's, you know, it's kind of rare when we're like, hey, let's talk about some of the other things. Let's talk about the video game. Let's talk about the comics. So,
Father, it's time to do an episode on something truly cheesy. We need to talk about what characters we ship or something like that. But yeah, like I'm curious to hear what people, if people have some other ideas, yeah, throw it out.
I don't know if that's what people want to do. I mean, if y'all want us to, you know,
who knows?
You want us to like talk about another like legacy show at some point? You know, after DS9, we're gonna do another one. We've done the animated series. We've done DS9. There's still got Enterprise, TOS, TNG, and Voyager. I'd like to get through all of those at some point. No rush. You know, it might take decades, but we'll get there eventually. Yeah. But yeah, like let us know. In the meantime, though, you can catch us next week and every week, Fridays at 7 p.m. Central, or you can listen to us later, wherever you get your podcast. And until next time, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Listen to the Text Trek podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or at text-trek.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/text-trek, and follow Fathery on Twitter at TXTrek. Please support us by liking our videos and subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Thank you and take care.